From WHQR Public Media in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Affordable housing, it's a phrase that towns and cities are attempting to define, and it's a sector of the real estate market that local leaders are struggling to foster. In the Cape Fear region, the city of Wilmington and New Hanover County approved an agreement over the summer to establish a joint workforce housing advisory committee. It's a permanent body, but even in the June discussion to sanction that committee, commissioners wound up in a debate over the definition of workforce housing. Former New Hanover County Workforce Housing Planner Julia Santura recently defined cost-burdened households as those spending more than 30% of their income on housing. In New Hanover County alone, about 45% of renters are cost-burdened, says Santura. Statewide, 44% of renters have that issue, and nationally, the number jumps to 47%. Paul D'Angelo is Community Development Program Director for the City of Asheville, but his work at the other end of the state is relatively new. He left his position as Director of Affordable Housing at Tribute Properties in Wilmington early last year, so he brings a working knowledge of the Cape Fear region, along with more than a year and a half of experience in Asheville, a city that arguably is ahead of Wilmington on its affordable housing quest. And he joins us today to explore what's working in Asheville, a city often held up as comparable to Wilmington in many ways. Paul D'Angelo, welcome to Coastline.
Thanks for having me, Rachel.
It's so great to have you here and you back in town for a little while.
Thanks.
And we want to invite you to join the conversation. What do you want to know about affordable housing? If you have a question for Paul D'Angelo, you can call us during the live Wednesday discussion at 910-343-1138. You can also email us today at coastline@whqr.org. Paul D'Angelo, a lot of people who aren't involved in local government or the real estate market may not really understand why we keep talking about affordable housing.
Mm-hmm.
What role does affordable housing play in a local or a regional economy?
It plays a larger role, I think, than people think in economics. The more folks are spending on their housing, whether it's rental or home ownership, the less money they have to spend not only on life's other necessities, but also in the local economy. So if you're having those cost-burdened renters, those cost-burdened homeowners spending more than 30%, more than 50% of their severely cost-burdened, then that's less money they have to support the local economy. And that's why it's such an economic issue. And these days, we're seeing the mostly stagnant wages, but the increasing housing costs. So we're going to push more folks into that cost burden issue.
You recently published a housing needs assessment for the city of Asheville.
Yes.
And this is something you do how frequently?
The city of Asheville, we do it for a larger county region every 5 years, and then we do a more local countywide City of Asheville update every two and a half years. So we just released it last Thursday and did a press release, got some good conversation going in the local news media about where our housing needs were, our affordable housing needs, and it was really interesting.
And you said that there were a number of interesting takeaways, but one big takeaway had to do with what you're finding about the rental market.
Well, and yes, and you know, we continue to have our cost burden issues in the rental market as well as home ownership as well, though it's lower. But for us, what we noticed was the drastic amount over the last 5 years of the homes for sale under $200,000 or $300,000. It was cut basically by a fourth to a fifth of the number of homes that were actually available for sale for somebody who wants to buy a house in the $200,000, $300,000 range. And that was really probably the most shocking thing to us. And then when you look at
how much that inventory has dropped, you're
completely
saying.
Yep. And we're hearing it, you know, we get the phone calls about it, we hear it, but then when it comes out on the data and you can actually see the numbers, it's kind of shocking. And what we see out of that is, you know, the other discussion about kind of income inequality. You know, 5-10 years ago, somebody making, you know, under $40,000 or so, you're pretty much, you know, going to be renting until your wages or income changes. That is growing up the chart there, where now you're seeing folks at the $60,000, $65,000, $70,000 in Asheville not being able to be homeowners. So that's pushing them into rental as well until their situation changes. And if homeownership is the big wealth builder, it kind of makes that income inequality discussion make so much more sense, because we're pushing a generation of folks into being lifetime renters. And, you know, those prices are going up too. So that was really the most shocking data. It was really, we were quite surprised.
It is interesting. You say people who are making $60,000 to $70,000 a year, and you call that a situation. I'm
right.
sure we have plenty of people listening who would say that actually sounds pretty good. So then there's another component of this too. When those folks can't afford to buy a house and they get pushed into the rental market, what
right.
does that do to the inventory in the rental market?
So the supply-demand issue can take over there. So we continue to struggle with a lack of supply of housing across the board. You are seeing more rentals housing come online, but there's still a lack of supply. So if you have more demand than supply, then you're going to see prices get pushed. And then if folks normally who are at the $60,000 price point, give or take, would normally buy a house but they can't afford to do it, then they're renting as well. It's expanding that market. So it even puts further pressure on those rental prices.
And we know in the Cape Fear region, and this is probably true in Asheville as well, when prices go up in the city, in the urban center, then people who make less money move kind of to the outer edges. They keep moving farther out. What's wrong with that trend?
Well,
why do you worry about that?
Well, I mean, it goes right to transportation. And I know that's a big deal in Wilmington when it comes to the transportation issues with all the traffic. And so many people are talking about that issue. And when I was here, we had at the Cape Fear Housing Coalition, we actually brought in somebody who talked about the number of cars coming in and out every day, and how if there was, you know, more affordable housing closer to folks' workplace, and, you know, nothing can always be ideal, but if we had more of it that was more aligned with the wages and salaries, then, you know, that helps with public transportation, that helps with bicycling, that helps with walking, so you're getting more cars off the street. It was always like, you know, to build the Affordable Housing Coalition, we reminded people that this is a transportation issue as well. You know, do you see how that works together? Because the pressure on the cars on the road, that's city infrastructure, there's dollars attached to that, and it can be a real congestion issue throughout the community.
Now, some people listening have, when you say the term affordable housing, they think about subsidized housing that probably is in a not so great neighborhood, however you would define that, and this natural resistance to it comes up. And there are also people who think, well, it's, you know, I worked hard and did well for myself, and now I can afford to buy this beautiful home on the water, and hopefully other people will too, but it's not my job to worry about that. I mean, is this...
Well, it talks about, you know, building community. You know, sometimes we talk about building housing, but it's really about building community. And, you know, for anyone who's still looking at the definition of affordable housing and subsidized housing, you know, call me. I'd love to talk more about that, because it's just about aligning wages and incomes and salaries that your community produces with the housing costs that are here. And I know the data that came out about 2 years ago here, most service economy mostly, 60% of the workers making $10 to $12 an hour, and you match that with the housing costs, like, that's not happening. So the fabric of the community that's making this, you know, tourism and service economy really hustle and bustle, those folks can't afford to live or be a part of that community. You hear this often talked about, like the firemen and the police officers across the state that kind of talk about, hey, we can't even live in the community we're protecting. But you've got the service workers, you've got the hotel workers, you've got the restaurant workers, the retail workers, a lot of those folks are getting pushed out. So for us, it's really about building community where everybody has an opportunity to thrive at the place that they call home and the place that they actually work and want to live.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking with Paul D'Angelo, who's Community Development Program Director for the City of Asheville. And we want to hear from you on this Wednesday. How do you think about affordable housing? Would you like to see more or less of it in your own neighborhood? You can call us during the live show at 910-343-1138. You can also email us today at coastline@whqr.org. So how do we define affordable housing? And is it synonymous with workforce housing?
So, I mean, the simple definition for affordable housing is just that no one, whether you're renting or homeowner, should spend more than 30% of your gross income on housing. If you're renting, that would include rent utilities. If you're owning a home, that would be your mortgage, insurance, and taxes. So it's just a general kind of budget thing, like you shouldn't spend more than 30% of your gross income.
How many people in Asheville do you think do spend more than? And we define that as cost burdened, right?
Correct.
So how many people in Asheville are cost burdened?
So right now, renters, 40, very similar to you all down here, again, very similar communities, close to 50% of our renters are spending more than 30% of their income, gross income on housing, and 20% of our renters are severely cost burdened. So one in five spending more than 50% of their gross income on housing costs. And again, I think that's very similar. For homeowners, I think in Asheville, it's close to 20% are cost burdened, mm-hmm. and about 8% are severely cost burdened, meaning they're spending more than 50% on their mortgage, insurance, and taxes.
How do owners, because I think the number is 24% in New Hanover County for owners who are cost burdened. Mm-hmm. How do owners get into that situation in the first place?
That's a really good question. I would think that, you know, the banks do their job and their due diligence to make sure that the home price equals the mortgage application and all that aligns. But as you're in a home longer, you see your utilities increase, your insurance goes up, especially if you're in a coastal community, your property taxes could go up. And then on top of those raises, you're seeing those continued, you know, stagnant wages for the most part. The only growth we're really seeing in wages is at the very low end of the spectrum, from like $7 to $8 an hour for your minimum wage.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking with Paul D'Angelo. He's Community Development Program Director for the City of Asheville. And when we come back from this break, we're going to learn about some of the initiatives that Asheville has implemented to create more affordable housing. We'll also hear from some listeners. You can reach us via email on this Wednesday at coastline@whqr.org or give us a call at 910-343-1138. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Today, it's an exploration of affordable housing, what it really is and how to create more of it with Paul D'Angelo. He's Community Development Program Director for the City of Asheville. And we want to hear from you during this live Wednesday discussion. Do you have a question about affordable housing? How do you feel when you hear that term? Give us a call during this live Wednesday discussion to ask a question or share your view. You can do that at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. Katie from Oak Island says, I just ran into two of my former students who work at AutoZone. I was thinking, where are these kids going to live? What happens when people work two to three jobs who maybe don't go to college? Where can they live affordably? Brunswick County increasingly doesn't have these options.
Well, one trend we're seeing, especially with some of the younger folks, either out of high school or college, and they're just getting started, is they're tripling up. And I find this really fascinating. So even locally, when I worked here at the Wilmington Housing Authority with an intern. Lots of roommates. And it was couple roommates. So again, an intern at the Wilmington Housing Authority just out of college. And she was living with her partner and two other couples in a three-bedroom apartment. And that was the only way at that young age you could make it affordable and still have that money to go out and spend in the local economy, which probably meant having some good time on a Friday or Saturday night. But that was the only way that she could make that work. And we see it in Asheville as well. Just the other day, I met somebody and I was like, oh, so, you know, you're living. Yeah. And they live with two other couples in a three bedroom.
It sounds like New York City.
The overcrowded issue. Correct. And some of the data in the housing needs assessment talked about these overcrowded situations.
So Your background is so interesting, Paul DeAngelo, because you lived in Wilmington for a while and worked with Tribute Properties on affordable housing. And now you're in Asheville. You've been there for not quite 2 years yet. So you've got these cities that are very similar in terms of the populations,
yes,
in terms of the demographics, in terms of the challenges and the opportunities,
mm-hmm,
in terms of the cultural richness. The only real difference is one's flat and one's not. But so when you look back now at your time in Wilmington, what do you think, what lessons do you think Wilmington could really learn from Asheville?
Well, that's a really good question. I think that there are a lot of great folks in the community who are interested in this issue, and that's not just the folks in the housing world. That there are, you know, people at the municipality level. There's probably business owners and corporate headquarters owners that are looking at this issue. And I think what I would probably say is there are some answers out there. When the federal money is not enough or the state money is not enough, the creativity at the local level and bringing in those partners and the policies that you need to get things done, it can happen. And that's one thing that I really learned in Asheville with the great tools that we have up there is we're trying to do our local part, knowing that there's not enough resources out there. So what resources can we bring to the table on an issue that's so important to our community and such a vibrant tourist and service economy where we want our local folks to feel just as good as the tourists every day when they come into work. And so we definitely are kind of, I think, pushing the envelope on the tools that we offer. And I think for Wilmington, I think there's people researching it. I think it'd be great to see some more local implementation. And we're always happy to share information across the strait from, like you said, one end to the other.
Do you think that there is more interest in the western part of the state in implementing some affordable housing initiatives than there is here? Is there resistance here? This is such a politically incorrect question, and I'm really putting you on the spot.
You are.
But is there resistance here? Or what resistance do people run into when there is that?
So I will follow along with my nickname of Positive Paul to try to keep it as positive, but it's a very good question. And while I think that there is interest here, I think that the interest in Asheville is more vocal. And I think you get more people at the table. We spoke briefly about before about the economics of the issue. Like, we're seeing some of the economic folks from the chamber, from the TDA, the Tourism Development Authority, coming to the table, seeing how the lack of housing and at a cost for corporations and how that's affecting them, local businesses. And so we're seeing.
So it's affecting. I'm sorry. I just want to make sure that we're following you as you. So it's affecting corporations and local businesses because their employees can't afford to live close to work.
Absolutely. And so we're seeing more of them at the table. So the interest is greater, I think, in Asheville, but it's also the vocal folks that come to the table. And I think that people see it more as an economic issue just as much as a social or equity or transportation issue. And you really have to have all those players at the table for real change, for real coalition building, to actually have a collective impact.
You're listening to Coastline. It's an exploration of affordable housing, sometimes also called workforce housing, with Paul DeAngelo, Community Development Program Director for the City of Asheville. And we want to hear from you on this Wednesday. How do you think about affordable housing? And would you like to see more or less of it in your neighborhood? You can call us during the live Wednesday discussion, 910-343-1138, or send an email to coastline@whqr.org. Carolyn from Wilmington, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Hi. Your lead-in was perfect for my question. And at the corner of Piner and College, Carolina Beach, they wanted to put in a development with low income or affordable apartments. It's across the street from Home Depot. And the neighborhood just was in an uproar, and all over the app next door, you know, people were posting that, you know, we had to, stop this. And I really don't understand. I'm trying to understand what people think of when they think of affordable housing, because I think of teachers and firefighters and police people, you know, and then the waitresses and the people that serve us every day, they need housing. And I couldn't, you know, I have a good job, and I look at the housing market now for apartments. I own a house, and I'm just flabbergasted.
Well, Carolyn, tell us what they're saying on Nextdoor about why people need to oppose this. What are they afraid of?
The word affordable. And that's what I'm trying to understand. Why does the word affordable, you know, evoke this much angst? What is going on? Do they think that poor people are going to pour into this side of town? Well, guess what? They're already here and they're sharing houses. I have neighbors where there's, you know, two entire families in a house built for one. And that's a lot of people and a lot of kids, you know. So everybody's sharing bedrooms. And so they're already here. It's just that they can't afford a place of their own.
Carolyn, you raise a really great point. Thank you so much for your call. Paul D'Angelo, certainly during your travels and your time in Wilmington, you ran into people who would identify what it is about low-income housing that put them off. So what is it?
Well, it's funny. When Carolyn started talking, I was thinking about, you know, any other points that I want to make sure I talk about. And I was literally thinking of NIMBYism, not in my backyard, when she started talking. You know, it is kind of...
Well, I worked hard for my backyard.
Right. And, you know, that's a real factor when the NIMBYs can come out and say, we don't want this type of housing in our community. And so that is, it's a consistent challenge, and it takes real local leadership to try to overcome that and how important that is. I was at one event where they talked about a affordable housing community, and they really tied the price points to the work in the community. And that really did make a difference to say—
In terms of public reaction?
Yes. So everyone at that meeting about a low-income housing tax credit property serving 60% of area median income and under was at the edge of their seat, ready to pounce on the developer. And then the developer brought up a chart to say, we're going to be targeting these income levels, and then immediately attach it to. So that would be a local hairdresser. At that wage, you're probably looking at a possible EMT worker. At that wage, you're looking at a retail worker. That made a difference. But at the same point, if I have anything to wish for Wilmington, where you talked about, like, is there the political will, I wish everybody would take a second to step back and understand that affordable is not a bad word. Last night I listened to people on the television talk about affordable health care. No one was up in arms about that. The last time I checked, no one was looking for expensive housing. You know, that's too reasonable. I need to spend more on my housing. But to really take a step back from their preconceived notions about affordable equaling subsidized or public housing, but take a look to say, well, what is that wage? And then think about the people in their community. Last night I checked into the hotel, and because I'm so nerdy about this, I asked the front desk person. She was like, oh, you hear about affordable housing? And I was like, yeah. You know, what do you make an hour, you know? And it's like $10 an hour.
The front desk
I'm terrible.
Clerk what she was
and,
making.
Yeah, I use it all as research. But you look at that, $10 an hour, you multiply that times $20,000 a year. Where is all of that going to work out? So my wish for the Wilmington community on a positive note would be for the folks that are out there, the people that don't want this in their backyard, to really take a look at those wages and who that person is in their community that they probably rely on at the grocery store, the car wash, at the hair salon, at the retail shop where they purchase clothes, anything like that. They're all here. They're working, most of them, and they need a place that they can afford with a roof over their head, and they want to support the local economy just like the folks who are doing great.
You know, the person who was heading up this affordable housing committee that is a joint committee between Wilmington and New Hanover County before she left talked about a public awareness campaign, which I found interesting. And I think you just kind of unpacked a big chunk of that, the idea that there's this sort of generalized fear, but then if people can identify, like that developer did in this presentation, who we're talking about, this is exactly who we're talking about, a hairdresser, a teacher, a firefighter, then it makes it more specific and less scary.
It does. And, you know, we don't want to forget that, you know, that helps with that NIMBYism issue. But we don't want to forget that there's also seniors on fixed income. We have members of our community who are disabled on Social Security or SSI. We've got some vets who are struggling out there. We've got our homeless population, and the groups like Katrina Knight and Good Shepherd are doing such a great job. So there's a variety of folks in your community, And the variety of folks in your community across that board need a variety of types of housing, both homeownership and rental, to have a place to live in the community. And it's like, for us in the world, it really makes sense. And we live in that world, but we're out there trying to educate and let people know. And if it starts by connecting a wage to a person, that's a great place to start.
I want to go back to Brunswick County just for a moment. Katie from Oak Island had asked questions about her students. And I want to note that we heard from the executive director of Brunswick County Habitat for Humanity. He says they are currently accepting applications for their home ownership program. And if you want to get an application for that, that's Brunswick County Habitat for Humanity. Residents in Brunswick County can visit the office in Southport, which is on Long Beach Road, visit any of the three thrift stores in Leland, Southport, and Ocean Isle, or you can just go online, brunswickcountyhabitat.org. And we will also post that information on our website along with this post.
I think that's great. And Rachel, if I can say one other thing about workforce housing up in Asheville, you know, which I don't know if everyone thinks it's wildly progressive up there, but we don't use the term workforce. Because when we're out in the community and people are talking about these issues, they remind us that people at 40% of the area median income, 60% of the area median income are working. So workforce is often looked at as 80 to 120% of the area median income. The housing authority talks about all the people in their community that are working, the tax credit properties. So it's interesting. Here in Wilmington, a 60% area median income for a two-person household is $35,000. For a single person, it's close to $31,000. You can easily attach that to probably looking at about $15 an hour, I think, and then start thinking about the people in your community that are at that wage and doing that job.
Now, there has been some discussion just in getting to the definition of what this is and what it means to the people working on it in this region. The people, say, below $31,000, aren't they taken care of by other programs?
Not necessarily. For if you're under 60% area median income, you could find housing costs that align with that wage either through a LIHTC project, the Low Income Housing Tax Credit Project, or projects or communities, or you could also qualify for a housing choice voucher from the Housing Authority. But if you look at both of those, the wait list for most properties, whether it's a community like a tax credit community or the housing choice voucher at the Housing Authority, they have huge, long wait lists. So they're going to be pushed most likely into an overcrowded situation. They're going to be pushed out to a further community where they can actually afford the rent, or they're going to try to find a place close to where they work and be cost burdened, which we don't really want to see.
Jim writes, we moved here in 2011 and rented a three-bedroom, two-bathroom house off White Road for $950 a month. When we moved in 2012, a year later, the owner offered to sell us that house for $130,000. Jim says, I looked up that house today and see that it sold in 2017, that would be 5 years later, for $175,000. It's now estimated value $192,000. Perhaps we should have bought that house after all.
No, 2011, that was a while ago. But that's if I saw a house in Asheville for $192,000, we would be thrilled. If we could get it into the hands of a local Ashevillian who's there. The other struggle we have up in Asheville, which is probably similar to Wilmington, is cash investors are coming in with cash, purchasing those lower-priced homes, doing a little work, and in Asheville, they're flipping like a two-bedroom, fixing it up a little bit, and renting it out for $1,800 a month.
How much of a factor, how much of a dynamic is that in the Asheville housing market?
It's really tough, and I know we talked about the amount of homes under $300,000 that are actually for sale and how that's dropped dramatically over the last 5 years. When they come available, we're trying to see what we can do to make sure that goes to either a local person in Asheville who's looking for affordable home ownership, or someone moving to the area with a job that's looking for affordable home ownership. But we lose so many of those to the cash investors who then flip it around and turn it into a rental.
So how does the city of Asheville then get their hands on that property or make sure that it goes to someone who's not going to flip it?
So I can get in trouble sometimes, but I was literally at the legal department being like, what can we do about this? You know, how can we stop this from happening? There's really not much we can do, although we do a lot of outreach to the folks selling those homes to, hey, what, could you really consider keeping this before a cash investor, give it another week or two to see if we can get a local homeowner at the table. So we kind of do that communication as best we can to go out there and advocate for that affordability factor of a house under $300,000. But when you're selling something and a cash investor shows up, it's tough. So it's another challenge we have in Asheville that I imagine you're seeing here in Wilmington.
You also have a housing trust fund funded by $500,000 from the general fund, and the city also has a bond for affordable housing, and some of that bond money is dropping into the trust fund.
Correct.
Tell us how that works and what you use that housing trust fund for.
So we do, that's one of our tools, so I can definitely talk about that. So the housing trust funds are kind of like local bank that we have at the municipality where we can do loans from 0 to 2% for, say, construction loan or longer-term permanent financing. Every year, I think, it started in 2000. There was $250,000 put in every year until 2015 or 16 when they upped that to $500,000. And then we got a $10 million drop in the bucket from the housing bond that passed. So now we're able to do loans to assist developments, layer that money along with other finances that resources and equity a developer brings to the table. So recently, I think it was about 2 months ago, we did close to $3 million in a housing trust fund loan, and we're going to get about 135 units out of that in just rental at the moment. We're always looking for home ownership opportunities, but that's really exciting because we were able to help make those deals close and get those units on the ground. And so we have the opportunity to utilize, you know, $10 million that we're out there trying to loan.
And generally, it's not economically, well, it's not really profitable for a developer to build affordable housing, right?
Yes.
Unless there are initiatives available. And we're going to ask you to unpack some of that when we come back from this break. You're listening to Coastline. We've got the Community Development Program Director for the City of Asheville, Paul D'Angelo, with us on this Wednesday. You can email us with a question or comment at coastline@whqr.org or call us at 910-343-1138. When we come back from this short break, we'll have one more segment for you to get your own question or comment in. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline. Listening to Coastline, I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Affordable housing, sometimes called workforce housing, is our exploration today. It's a real estate sector that more cities and towns are trying to encourage. And today we're learning how affordable housing affects a local and regional economy and how the city of Asheville is working to create more of it. My guest today is Paul D'Angelo. He's Community Development Program Director for the city of Asheville. And we want to hear from you on this Wednesday. What do you think about affordable housing? What does that mean to you? And how do you feel about having more of it in your neighborhood? You can call us during the live show on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138. You can also email us today at coastline@whqr.org. It is the last segment, so just a few minutes left to get your question or comment in. And Paul D'Angelo, we've been talking about some of the mechanisms, the tools that are available for the city of Asheville to help people like developers, actually, to incentivize them to create more affordable housing. You have city-owned land.
Correct.
That you can use.
Mm-hmm. We just passed a policy last month, actually, on using city-owned land for affordable housing, which is capable to do in North Carolina. So what we did is anyone wanting to access city-owned land, we're asking for what we would call 20-60-20, which is 20% of the units at 60% AMI for 20 years. And so, in other words, any parcel that the city is going to work with the transaction with is going to have that requirement that we need to see 20-60-20 at a minimum. If the parcel location makes sense for more affordability, we'll have a little competition there and see what we can also bring to the table. Or if it's maybe a parcel already in a moderate to low income neighborhood, 20% might be perfect. We might want to see some more moderate market rate. So we're really excited to have that tool. We have a 5-acre site that we'll be sending out an RFQ, a request for qualifications for very shortly. And we're really excited to see that development happen with this 20-60-20 that we passed with City Council in partnership with my department and the Real Estate Department. And then the other tool, besides the Housing Trust Fund, which is our bank, and we had that housing bond, is we have down payment assistance program of $1 million. We're working to invest in our community land trust, $1 million from the housing bond there.
So the down payment assistance program, how do people learn about that? And who would be eligible for something like that?
So that is also targeted for folks making under 80% of the area median income. And so working with their banker, lender, and a mortgage and their realtor, if they find a house for $225,000, but their mortgage only qualified for $200,000, we can come in to possibly fill that $25,000 gap, depending on where the house is located, City of Asheville limits.
Is that something they'd have to pay back?
It would, if they're in the home for 30 years, and so we're looking for investment into the community, you would not pay that back after 30 years. And we gave a break for years 20 through 30, a 10% discount off your payback for years 20 through 30, because we wanted to value people staying in a community. So we're thrilled to have that program. Fee rebates, that goes to council next month. So for every affordable unit that you put, that you help build in your community, you'll get a 50, 75, or 100% rebate off many of our fees that we charge at the service or at the city. This includes the water fee, which can be quite expensive.
So this is a rebate, meaning that you would pay it up front and then you would get that back.
Correct. And that seems to satisfy the North Carolina statute that it is not a grant program, that it is rebated back. And we also want to go out there and confirm that the level of affordability, whether it was 50, 75, or 100, was actually reached. And then the biggest one we have right now is our land use incentive grant, which is property tax abatement. So we have a score sheet, and if you're building close to the Central Business District, you're offering 20% of your units, the 20-80-20, and you're, you're taking vouchers from the Housing Authority, you score points. You score 80 points. Every 5 points will equal 1 year of city property tax rebate. And so 80 divided by 5 is...
So what does that mean in terms of...
I'm doing
the math, but what does that mean? That means that particular year you don't pay property tax on that...
On the improvements. So you would pay it and say the parcel you bought was worth $1,000. After you construct your apartment units, the parcel is worth $100,000, something, you know, easy math. Whatever your property taxes you're paying, you would pay and they would be rebated back to you for the term of however many years you qualified for the land use incentive grant. And it was 10 points equaled 1 year of property tax abatement. We changed it to 5 because we realized we weren't really meeting developers halfway in asking for these affordable units for such a, you know, the 20-80-20 for 20 years.
So are you just making this, I mean, what's the incentive for developers? Does it become then profitable when they have fee rebates and the land use incentive grant?
It becomes reasonable for both parties to get those affordable units on the ground. It's part of the city's mission to make sure that we're helping to provide the affordable housing. But I'm shocked about the number of developers in Asheville who've come to the table to say, we know this is a problem. How can we help? They're not necessarily going to just, you know, take the loss in all the affordable units. But if we can meet them halfway, whether it's with the Housing Trust Fund loaned, city-owned land, fee rebates, land use incentive grant, if we're meeting them halfway that makes it more financially doable for them, we're finding that they will agree to do the affordable units.
And another mechanism that you have is moving a project to the top of the pile if somebody...
Expedited review. So if you are including affordable units in your project, you will go to the top of the pile so that we can move you through quicker. Time can be money. So we can move you through the planning process and the permitting process a lot faster with affordable units.
Go ahead.
Well, just quickly, it's funny with the subsidy, which we call investment up there. If you think about it and you're asking a developer to take $500 less a month to make the unit affordable, they could charge $1,300, but we're asking them to charge $800. $500 for that unit per month, per year for 20 years is $120,000 that they're kind of leaving on the table. how do we as a city say, hey, we can maybe make that you're only leaving $60,000 or $40,000 on the table because of our tools. And that seems to be the attraction, that they're taking their part while the city's taking their part. Because I think most developers out there see the need for these affordable units.
Yeah. You're listening to Coastline. It's an exploration of affordable housing with Paul D'Angelo, Community Development Program Director for the City of Asheville. How do you think about affordable housing? Would you like to see more or less of it in your own neighborhood? Call us during the live Wednesday discussion at 910-343-1138 or send an email to coastline@whqr.org. Just a few minutes left. Mary writes, I moved from a rural county to Wilmington in 2016. The Housing Choice Program through HUD helped me afford rent by keeping my rent under 30%. I'm assuming of her income. Now crime, two new drug treatment facilities, and the Suboxone Clinic at Coastal Horizons in my neighborhood made me seek homeownership to escape these issues. As I could only qualify for a $100,000 mortgage, New Hanover, Pender, and Brunswick counties are not options. My search has taken me outside this area, which means my son with autism will endure long commutes to get services. Affordable housing isn't possible when tourism and Airbnb keep rentals and property values too high for regular people to afford. She writes, also, I've heard Trillium is paying $1,200 a month rent on a two-bedroom apartment. Okay, we can't verify that. She says, I can't blame landlords for taking steady money from the state, especially when it may be close to double their mortgage payment. Is Mary's story the kind of anecdotal story that you might hear about people in Asheville having to move farther and farther out?
Yep, absolutely. We see it all the time. We get the phone calls in the community development department. And that's interesting because that's even somebody who has the opportunity to get a housing choice voucher. It's helping to better align their wage with that housing cost, but it still doesn't quite work. And then it sounds like there's challenges in that neighborhood, perhaps for her and her situation that she's looking for. There are not a lot of options available for folks like Mary, it sounds like, in Asheville, but also here in Wilmington.
And WHQR reporter Vince Winkle has a good question. He writes, cities or governments that require private developers to include affordable housing, that's referred to as inclusionary zoning. Mm-hmm. And Paul D'Angelo, you're nodding your head, but Vince writes, 20 states have this, but it's not allowed in North Carolina.
That's correct. That's why we're doing everything we can at the City of Asheville to incentivize that. And we're really following that model. Those 20 states have found a way to make it work, working with the developers. They know if they're working in those states, they're going to do 20% of their units somewhat affordable. Here, while we can't do it legally, we're trying to find ways to incentivize it. And again, I hope, and it's our hope in Asheville, that with these programs, willing partners at the table and a willing developer, we'll see every developer put 20% of their units. We actually did a study up there, or I did a few months back in Asheville, where we looked if every multifamily development apartment complex that came up had done 20% of their units affordable, we would have had an additional 400 affordable units on the ground in the previous 4 years. So that those numbers all can start adding up to kind of do a better job of offering an opportunity to folks like Mary, like that you can actually have a different place to move into because the whole community is out there focused on this issue.
New Hanover County has funded water and sewer to workforce housing in the Gordon Road area. You may or may not know about this. Mm-hmm. The county plans to donate unused land to nonprofits who will build more workforce housing there.
Great.
And there's also help for victims from Hurricane Florence, that was 2018, mm-hmm. with grants to elevate homes. And the idea there, I guess, is to retain some of the already existing affordable housing.
Yes.
This sounds like a lot of tangible progress, actually.
Well, and those, the community development block grant dollars for that disaster recovery, I believe, will be coming to New Hanover County. So there is an opportunity to look at those funds and how that can work to produce, preserve, and protect affordable housing, which is a big mission of ours in Asheville. So that is going to be kind of a funding stream. I don't know what the ties are there, but that's an opportunity to address some of those issues particularly preserving affordable housing that's already out there on the ground. I know you all lost a lot of units down here during the storm.
And that's not something that Asheville has been plagued by, thankfully,
yes,
as much.
Mm-hmm.
Would the legislature change their mind on this inclusionary zoning issue? What's the resistance there?
Well, I think the political atmosphere in Raleigh right now, I don't think that it probably would be possible to talk about inclusionary zoning. But anybody interested in this issue who has a contact with their municipality, regionally, locally, statewide, should reach out to have that discussion. I think while that issue somewhat remains stagnant on inclusionary zoning, I do think there's an opportunity to talk about additional funding streams because this work does require money, talking about that subsidy issue of $120,000 per unit. Federal money, local money can only go so far. I would love to see more of a conversation in Raleigh about, well, if it's funding we need, and who doesn't, but is there a funding stream that hasn't been thought about that could be used to specifically funnel into affordable housing? I would love to see something done with the hotel tax rate where 13% is where it's at now. Could it be 13.25? And that 0.25% is being paid by tourists who use a lot of the infrastructure. I don't think anyone would bat an eye. And could that funding then be funneled into affordable housing? So we're always looking at any options on the table.
So there are funding streams, but then there are also regulations or ordinances that can facilitate or
yes,
help kind of repress,
mm-hmm,
the movement of affordable housing, mm-hmm, into an area. What are some ordinances that would be affordable housing friendly?
Well, that is a great, great question. And we just had an affordable housing workshop in Asheville with city council members on September 26th. Figuring out what our role is. So we know we can come to the table with incentives. We also know we can build a coalition, but we also know we could take a look at our regulations. And one of my partners in crime at City of Asheville, Todd, is here at the planning conference, and he's the head of the planning department, and we're having those discussions. You've seen some communities to where they got rid of single-family zoning, Minneapolis and Oregon, so that it's no longer this kind of separation issue that you'll allow some multifamily in those districts. And there's some important work that could be done there so that it's a by right build and you don't have to worry as much about the NIMBYisms, but you still are very careful and cautious about that transformation in a neighborhood. So it's not like house, apartment complex, quadplex. You work with the community on that. And again, if everyone's at the table working on that, you can make those changes happen and provide that housing.
You have said in the past that moving things forward in Wilmington can be hard.
Yes.
And it can be, just yeah, because there are all kinds, mm-hmm, of issues. Some of it is bureaucratic red tape. Some of it is just resistance to, mm-hmm, the idea. Certain neighborhoods, I think Carolyn's anecdote about her neighborhood,
yes,
and then people on Nextdoor talking about how they needed to oppose it is probably not so unusual. But what would really move the ball down the field in terms of affordable housing in the Cape Fear region? I mean, what's the biggest takeaway that people in southeastern North Carolina can take from what the city of Asheville is doing?
Well, I think it's interesting because I almost feel like Asheville's like 3 or 4 years ahead of Wilmington. Because our challenges continue to, you know, have this amazing urban core where everyone wants to be a part of it. We're seeing 600,000, 700,000 condominiums. We just put a hotel moratorium because so many hotels are being built downtown that the locals came out to say, you know, enough is enough. We're losing our community. We're 3-4 years ahead. Learn from the stuff that we're doing now, that if we could have, you know, maybe done more 3 or 4 years ago, we could have gotten ahead of this issue. And so I think that we have that learning opportunity from Asheville here in Wilmington. Also, you know, a voice, you know, for people to actually come out and use your voice, which is one reason I reached out to come into town to say, hey, Rachel, I've been bugging you for years about Coastline. Can I come on the air? I think that anyone who has an interest in this issue should show up at the new committee and these new meetings. It makes a difference to use your voice.
And that's this edition of Coastline. Paul D'Angelo of the City of Asheville, what a pleasure having you with us today. Thank you.
It's a pleasure. Thanks.
Coastline's producer is Caitlin Freund. Technical director is Ken Campbell. Rachel Keith is news producer. Coastline is a production of WHQR Public Media. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at WHQR.com. hqr.org. Get the podcast, find it on the HQR app, and we will post that information about the application for Brunswick County's Habitat for Humanity. That application period is open. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.